Welcome to Locked On Warriors, your daily podcast on all things Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg, Warriors writer for the Mercury News, here with Charles T. Hamilton, and we'll get to his free agent targets later on. But I want to start with Draymond Green's scorched earth-style campaigning to set the record straight about why Kevin Durant left the Warriors last summer. On the All the Smoke podcast this week, Green told Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson that Bob Myers and Steve Kerr suspended him because he wouldn't apologize to Durant after the Clippers blow up early in the season, and that their relationship wasn't the same after that. He then added that if Durant had wanted to stay in Golden State, that he could have had Draymond Green traded. So Charles, there's a lot there, but I want to know what you found most interesting about these comments and maybe just all of Draymond's comments over the last few days.
Yeah. I mean, he's Draymond. I don't know if we should expect anything else. I'm not disappointed, especially because we don't know what the future holds for next season, just as far as when it will start and all this other stuff. So, you know, this might blow over by then, but right now it's just, I don't know. I mean, what more do you expect from Draymond Green going on Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson's podcast? Like, he wasn't going to hold back.
Do you feel like he is speaking for Warriors fans? Is he doing something for Warriors fans right now? Or are Warriors fans proud of him?
I mean, I think he's doing something. I think he's doing something for a section of Warriors fans. And not that he's doing it for them, but I know there's a section of Warriors fans that for some reason never bought into Kevin Durant, which is so dumb to me. I still will never understand that. Like, I'm thankful Kevin Durant came and played for the Warriors for three seasons, helped them win championships and all that stuff. I don't get it. The fact that he refused to apologize, I think, is pretty ridiculous, because I said when it happened, I'll continue to say he was wrong. He was wrong in that situation to act the way he did. And again, people, you know, there's a certain reporter who, you know, clearly gets, has a relationship with Draymond, and that's awesome. You should have relationships with players. But this reporter comes out and is like, you know, he had done, you know, they didn't suspend him when he almost tried to fight Steve Kerr. Why are they suspending him for this? And it's because it's a history of behavior. It's not, you know, you don't get acquitted for one crime and then guilty of another crime and then go, but I got off with the first one. Like, it's, you know, it's all built up here. And so I thought he was wrong in what happened. I thought the suspension was warranted. The drama that ensued with it and Kevin Durant, I mean, who knows? Apparently Draymond knows better than us, but yeah, their relationship was never the same. And yeah,
we can blame Kevin Durant for a lot of things. I certainly do. He did not handle himself well at all last year, but I will, mm-hmm. I agree with you though, in that specific circumstance in that Clippers game. I mean, there's really not that much to parse out here, right? You just watch it. Who looks like the jackass? Draymond is. Yeah. And it's as simple, it really is as simple as that. Like, you look like, whatever was said, it doesn't matter because you're on cameras, a nationally televised game. This is an important game early in the season in a situation where we already kind of think Kevin Durant is on the way out anyway. Mm-hmm. And you look like a jackass because you're doing something that should have been handled in the locker room behind closed doors. There's nothing you could do about it at that point, right? You could have whatever you said right there could have been said later on when the game was over. It didn't change the outcome of the game. And, you know, with Draymond Green saying that and basically saying that the relationship was strained from there on. And I believe earlier in the week he had said that Kevin Durant was upset that he wasn't named. He wasn't considered the best player in the league after winning the 2017 finals. And so, you know, that just overall bitterness toward the media or whoever was not really he just had this kind of little brother kind of attitude about it. And I think that just sort of affected it affected his overall demeanor. And by the way, Draymond saying that is not the first time we had heard that. You know, Kevin Durant, it came out and I believe he told Chris Ballard of Sports Illustrated, if I have my stories right, that his whole goal was to be the number one player in the league. And he's never really been considered that widely, especially while LeBron has been in his peak.
My question is just who's doing the rankings here? You know, like, who was he listening to, right, to where it's, you know, this idea that he wasn't the best player in the league? I thought he was, you know, after those finals and that season. And just, I mean, maybe he would have been considered that if he wasn't hurt this year also. But just, it's such a weird thing. Like, who would he have needed to say it to feel better about it? You know what I mean? Like, it's just such a weird thing. What, NBA Twitter?
Like, yeah, I think with LeBron, it was just such an overwhelming and loud drumbeat of course he's the best. He's the best, yeah, until proven otherwise. And he was that for a decade. And Durant believed in 2017 that he proved otherwise. Hey, I beat him. I went one-on-one. And what everybody said, and these are the voices that I'm sure he heard, was, well, you did it, but you did it with Steph and with Clay and with Draymond and with Steve Kerr and with Andre Iguodala and a great bench and all these things. Against a team that was completely, like, that you completely overmatched from a talent perspective. And that's not true. I just think that he never, I think there were definitely people who considered Kevin Durant the best player in the league, but it was just never overwhelming in the way that LeBron was always considered the best player in the league. And
yeah, yeah, I guess it's just such a weird thing.
I never considered him the best. I never did.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he was. I thought they went, you know, head to head in the finals, and I thought he definitely outplayed him. I thought, you know, LeBron's defense has been, when he likes to lock in defensively, he's still good, but he doesn't do that as much as he used to. And, you know, KD was a defensive monster. But again, you know, what does it matter? We're just two guys who don't play basketball talking about it. So why would it matter if you know, people thought that about KD or not? It's just such a weird argument. And I'm sure it is true. I'm sure it is something that did bother him and maybe still bothers him. But it's just such a weird thing. Like, what is it that, you know, would have changed your mind, that would have made you feel better about it?
And you mentioned, like, two guys not playing basketball, and these players will always talk, well, I don't listen to people who didn't play, etc.
Yeah, right.
But you've got Draymond now going out and saying all the things that those of us who didn't play saw, because it was really obvious. Okay. And Draymond, like, he's not breaking any news here. He's making headlines, but he's not breaking any news here. And that's two different things, because he's kind of just reaffirming everything that we've already either heard him say before in different contexts, or what we all knew to be true just by common sense and being around the team and just reading in between the lines and just seeing this happen and seeing him blow up on Kevin Durant in the Clippers game. So I don't really know what to make of it all happening now. I don't know if it's just Draymond Green being bored. When Draymond gets bored, he does have a tendency to do these things. Mm-hmm. This is not unlike his character. Or if there's something else happening here, he doesn't have to be doing this.
Yeah. I forget who it was. And maybe it was a number of people, but said it's, you know, Draymond's weird way of motivating, like, Steph and Clay or something, which I don't know. I don't see it, especially considering we don't know when the season's going to start and all that.
Like, motivating to do what? Stay inside better?
Yeah. Like, and one thing I will call BS on was when he said, what was it? You know, if KD wanted to stay, he could have just had me traded and I would have been fine with it. I would have understood. No, you wouldn't have. You would have been pissed. You would have been doing the same stuff you're doing right now, just trashing the Warriors.
Absolutely right.
So, yes. I mean, he's right, though. If KD did want to stay, he could have easily said, Bob, I can't play with Draymond anymore, and then Draymond's gone. But Draymond wouldn't have been fine with it.
He was absolutely right in that sense, yeah. What he says, the quote here is, this is effing Kevin Durant we're talking about. Yeah, I've done great things here, but let me tell you this. If Kevin really wanted me here, all he would have – if Kevin really wanted to be here, all he would have had to do – went to Bob and said, yeah, I'll stay, but Draymond's got to go. And guess what? Bob Myers would have called me and said, Draymond, I love you, and I won't trade you to a bad team, but where do you want to go? And that's exactly how it would have went down. And it's kind of fun to have this thought exercise of where would Draymond Green have wanted to go? Because he's obviously only played for Golden State in his career. Like, would he have wanted to go to Detroit to go home? Probably not, because they suck. So he probably would have picked some sort of winning team. Who knows? He may have picked the Lakers. And, like, that's not the conversation that I want to have. That's not the podcast I think is worth having. But you're absolutely right. Because then he goes on and says, so to try to point the finger and say, oh, man, I left because of him. Get the F out of here. I still love Kay. His feelings about me may not be the same, but I'll ride with him for the rest of my life. I got that type of love from that brother. But you didn't leave because of me. You're effing Kevin Durant. If he wanted to be here, I would have been out and I would have been gone. And guess who would have understood that? Points the finger at himself. I understand the business of basketball. So again, you're completely right. Had that all happened, Draymond Green being completely understanding and quiet about something happening in the league, like, wake me up when that actually happens, because that just doesn't happen. And look, I love Draymond Green for it, but that would not have happened.
I'll say this, because you're right. We don't want to do this podcast, but you know who would kill to have Draymond Green, especially after, you know, the Warriors have eliminated them, it feels like 100 times in the playoffs, is Portland. So that would have been interesting. I don't know if Bob would have sent him there, you know, a division or a conference rival, but that's always been interesting to me, but not happening.
Oh, they would have thrown everything they had to get Draymond, I think, sure.
Yeah.
Speaking of some offseason movement, you have more free agent targets for us this week. We'll get to that next. This is Locked On Warriors. From an early morning breakfast burrito to a 12-pack of beers while you watch the game, sometimes what you need delivered fast, and that's where Postmates comes in. If you're like me, you probably start thinking about what to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch. I love food. That's why I love using Postmates. They deliver food from every restaurant I can think of right to my door. But Postmates doesn't just deliver burgers and sushi. They actually make life easier with grocery delivery and whatever I can think of delivery too. Convenience stores, clothing stores, you name it. So no more trips to the store, no more late night fast food runs. I don't even have to worry about where to grab lunch anymore. Just download the Postmates app on iOS or Android, find your favorites, and get anything you want delivered within the hour. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use the code LOCKEDONNBA. That's code LOCKEDONNBA for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. All right, Charles, every Friday you come onto the show and you bring us two free agent targets, and we debate who between those two targets would be the best fit for the Warriors. Who did we do last week? We did Troy Daniels and another
Bryn Forbes.
And Bryn Forbes, which was a really good one. Who do we have this week?
So this one's kind of similar. We're looking at shooters, but we're looking at shooters who are a little bigger. It's not the most exciting. It's still – this is more guys probably towards, I don't know, that 10th spot on the team. Would get time, but, you know, not the big-name free agents. Still looking at shooters, though, and I'm going with Allen Crabbe and Marco Bellinelli, both of them free agents, both of them same price range, the minimum. And, you know, like I've said, I'm trying to be realistic here. You know, they're not going to go out and get the biggest they're not going to be able to sign Joe Harris, who's also a free agent and a, you know, sharpshooter. I would love to throw him in on this list, but he's just out of their price range. No question. So Allen Crabbe, Marco Bellinelli. The biggest difference is the fact that Crabbe is younger. He's 28 and let's see. Yeah, won't turn 29 until towards the end of next season. Marco Bellinelli is 34 and same thing. He'll turn 35 towards the end of next season. But Crabbe has had some injuries the last 2 years, but he's a career 38.7 three-point shooter. And last year he was injured and, you know, was in and out of lineups, was only around 30%. But looking at 18-19, he was shooting just about 38% from three. Again, these guys are bigger, both of them 6'5". Capable defenders, where with Bryn Forbes and Troy Daniels, neither of them are really going to get it done for you. You're going to be hiding them on someone. Crabbe and Bellinelli at least have the size to, you know, guard some positions. Bellinelli, kind of similar numbers. He's, you know, a career 37.6 shooter, shot just under 37% from three last year. He's Warrior fans remember him, and Spurs fans, I know we don't have a lot of Spurs fans listening. He drives some Spurs fans crazy with his shot selection, but still, these are guys that can contribute. And you know me, I'm looking for shooters for this team, because even though they have two of the best, there's not much behind them.
Yeah, that's an interesting decision here, because I do – Marco Bellinelli has certainly been more productive. You would trust him, I think, in the last 5 minutes of a game more than you would trust Allen Crabbe.
Mm-hmm.
That said, we're talking about, like you said, the 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th guy on the roster. Probably not somebody that's going to be in the game in the last 5 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. So I would probably go with Alan Crabb. Also, he's younger, like you said. I think that matters. Like, theoretically, his best basketball is ahead of him, where I think we'd all agree Marco Bellinelli's best basketball is way behind him. If you can get Alan Crabb healthy, there could be something there. They're a similar size. I consider Alan Crabb longer. I don't know if he technically is, but I just view him as longer, more rangy as a defender. And so I'd go with Crabb here just because I like the body. I like the youth there. And just from a catch and shoot standpoint, I think it would work well.
I'm with you. He is a little more, a little longer. Obviously the youth is there. He went to Cal. So, you know, he's not a local kid, but he does have ties here to where, you know, if they are able to kind of be successful in the reclamation project of Alan Crabb, you know, fans would love it. And he's had a career being able to knock down threes. You know, if you kind of get over last year, which was injuries and a trade and, you know, inconsistent play time, you know, he could be helpful. And again, these are two guys that you'll get for the minimum. And that's what the Warriors have to look for. They have minimum contracts, mid-level, the taxpayer mid-level, and then, you know, the trade exception, and that's about it. So I'm with you on the Alan Crabb. I have a more exciting one next week, but I know we had to keep this one quick. So I thought, you know, these two end of the bench guys would be good to talk about. But you know what? If they chose Bellinelli, because we know that Steve Kerr prefers veterans and Bellinelli has those Spurs ties, I'd be fine with Bellinelli too. Like, this is one where I'm Crabb, you could maybe get more years out of, but in a 1 year vacuum, I'd be fine with Bellinelli too.
And realistically, this is probably a 1 year player. Mm-hmm. That where if you get Crabb, you like maybe what he could do a little bit more defensively than Bellinelli. But Bellinelli is a better ball handler. And I think that's what the Warriors really need. And it's an underrated team need of theirs. The shooting, they do need. They like Draymond Green is never going to shoot 30% again in his career. Cool. Eric Paschal is, you know, jury's still out to see if he could develop that jumper. I'm not willing to go one way or the other on that yet. But even Andrew Wiggins is an inefficient long-range shooter.
Not sure about Jordan Poole, you know?
Like, yeah, Jordan Poole, who knows? Exactly. I mean, they're not getting much, you know, floor spacing from either of their big men at this point. Mm-hmm. So it's really just Stephen Clay. And look, that's okay because it's Stephen Clay. But, you know, we know that this team is going to be looking for a lot more of that. And Bellinelli, Crabb, they can both shoot from the perimeter. Bellinelli can obviously provide that ball handling too. So he sort of checks both of those boxes. While Crabb, I think, doesn't necessarily check the box defensively. Again, he's always been more of a theoretical defender than a good defender. Mm-hmm. But I guess he's got more potential to check that box, where we know Bellinelli is just not going to do that. So it's an interesting one. And again, it's a good point you make. This is sort of the guys that the Warriors could be dealing with. I will say I do expect them to favor that 26 to 29 age range. Mm-hmm. More than the 30s age range. I do think that there is a want for this team to get guys that are a little bit younger than the Sean Livingstons and Andre Iguodala's to flesh out the roster. Because as Draymond and Steph and Clay, you know, past 30 years old, they're going to need those guys to step up in the regular season. We're not just where they needed Sean Livingston and Andre Iguodala to step up in the playoffs. They're going to need those guys at those positions now to step up in a regular season to take some of the wear and tear off of Steph, Clay, and Draymond. That was not always the case the last few years, and especially not having Kevin Durant to do what he was able to do as a one-man offense and just an unbelievable defender. You know, there's going to be a lot more pressure on all those guys, so I think they're looking for a little bit more mileage out of these players, you know, 6 through 12 or 13 at this point.
Definitely, and, you know, with youth comes a little more athleticism too. You know, not all of them. They might look for certain athletes, but, you know, as we know with Steph, Clay, and Draymond, they're, you know, obviously they're athletic because they're NBA players, but they're not, you know, the most athletic NBA players. You know, they've lost some of that. Andre Iguodala was a great athlete even at his age, you know, Kevin Durant, JaVale, et cetera. And they got some of that with guys like Marquise Chris and Kai Bowman and, you know, Michael Mulder, I was really surprised with as well, but still, you know, they got to look for more athletes as well, and that will come with the youth.
That'll do it for Charles and I today. Coming up next, I wanted to share with you a sample of one of our best programs on the Locked On Podcast Network. Rejecting the Screen has amazing interviews with NBA people, uncovering never before told stories or unknown tales from the NBA. You could subscribe to Rejecting the Screen on Apple, Spotify, or on Google Podcasts. Here is now a collection of the best of from Rejecting the Screen with Noah Kaslov and Adam Stanko. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Noah Kozlov from Rejecting the Screen on the Locked On Podcast Network. Adam Stanko and I get together twice a week to talk hoops with folks who have touched the NBA on all sorts of levels, from all-stars, coaches, executives, and media members. Recently, the number 3 pick in the 2006 NBA draft, Adam Morrison, joined us to tell a story about how Kobe Bryant, his former Lakers teammate with whom he won 2 rings, went above and beyond to lift his spirits.
It was a year after I was out, and so I wasn't playing, obviously, and I was really depressed, and I was basically a hermit in my own house, and I was, didn't go out in the community at all, and you know, if you did, it was one of people asking you, why aren't you playing? And I was, you know, I'm 26 at the time or whatever I was, and, you know, number 3 pick, and just really low point in my life. And I get a text from Robert Lara, the Lakers security, and it was Kobe's, like, one of his best friends. And he said, hey, what's your address? I got something in the mail for you. And I get the package, and it's an autographed jersey from Didier Drogba, who is my favorite player. I'm a Chelsea fan. You know, it was from Kobe. And game-worn jersey, you know, signed Didier Drogba, to Adam, best wishes. And I always thought Kobe, you know, made a phone call, which is, would be fine. It's still cool as shit. It's unbelievable. The night he passed, I'm scrolling through, reading everything, and I'm emotional. And on Chelsea's, you know, Instagram page, it's him with Didier Drogba holding up a jersey, and it says, to Adam, best wishes. So he went up to my favorite player, got it signed for me without me even asking, and sent it to me when he knew I was low. That's what Kobe Bryant was, man. He was just one of those dudes who understood his own aura.
When 4-time All-Star Sean Marion hung out with us, not only did he tell us that he tried to recruit Kobe Bryant to the Suns the summer that the Suns ended up signing Steve Nash and Quentin Richardson, he also told us that his 2006 Suns team should have won the title. In the 2011 preseason, his Mavericks teammate Jason Terry was so confident they'd win it all, he got a tattoo of the trophy.
We was at Deshaun Stevenson's house. We had a game in Orlando, and we went to his house, and you know, a few of the team, and we was over having Barb eating and stuff, and then this tattoo guy came over there, and Jet guy tattooed a trophy on his bicep. I was like, damn, dude. I was like, for real? I was like, okay. I'm loving it. I'm loving the confidence and the swag we have right now. So, like, let alone, don't nobody else in the world know we doing this and we feeling this right now. Because everybody in the league has aspirations. A lot of teams have aspirations to win championships, but it ain't but maybe a handful that actually can do it. You know what I'm saying? So we was one of those teams. And, like, we sitting there going through this process and looking at this, and, yeah, we was like, yeah.
Did he tell you, hey, I'm going to get a tattoo of the trophy? Did you know as it was happening, or once he got it, he showed you, he's got a tattoo of the trophy?
Well, it was called all kind of one sequence. He's like, we won the championship this year. I'm about to get a trophy right now. Okay. We were like, okay, that's what's up. I mean, you don't get no better than that. Come on now. You don't get no better than that.
Yeah, it
doesn't. You don't get no better than that.
Kevin Willis never did win a ring, but he was an all-star and was one of the most dominant rebounders of his era. He spent year 16 of his career with the Toronto Raptors when Tracy McGrady was in year 2 and Vince Carter was a rookie. As expected, he had some pretty good advice for those kids.
They used to call me OG, old head, things like that. And I think I was in my 15th year or somewhere up in there. And it was like, yeah, man. I used to tell him and T-Mac, I say, T-Mac, first of all, you need to stop falling asleep on the bench and practice. You got to stay awake. You keep falling asleep. I used to tell him and Vince, you guys rather hope that you get the 15 years because you little snot-nosed rookies. But, you know, they were great, great rookies. Great talent.
Speaking of vets and rookies, when Suns legend Eddie Johnson got traded to Seattle, Gary Payton was a rookie point guard, And since everyone loves a good one about GP running his mouth, Eddie delivered.
And I remember one day at practice, I was there for about 2 weeks. And I remember he kept disrupting practice. And Gary's a smart guy. He had a right to talk in that regard because I got to know him. He really knows the game, obviously. He's a Hall of Famer. He's one of the greatest defenders ever now. But at the time, he was a rookie. And rookies were not supposed to talk under my watch.
Right.
So that's what it was for me. And I just couldn't get over the fact that this rookie kept talking. You know, and I let it go for 2 weeks. And I asked Nate McMillan, I said, is it a point in time, man, when you all, like, going to say something to him? And Nate was like, man, you know, Nate kind of shook it off. And I said, well, I'm going to say something. And lo and behold, one practice, he's got the yapping and, you know, coaches going over stuff and he yapping. And I just finally said, would you shut the F up?
About 15 years later in Seattle, P.J. Carlesimo was coaching the Sonics with rookie Kevin Durant. When P.J. came on the show, he revealed how ahead of the curve his staff was when KD was on the floor.
One good thing we really did with him was we exposed him to a lot of things in terms of we played him at 2, we played him at 3, we played him at 4. We put him in pick and rolls. We encouraged him to shoot threes. It's his only bad three-point percentage. If you look at his percentage year by year, in the NBA, it's far and away the lowest one. But again, in those days, it was even a bigger jump from college three to NBA three. And Kevin didn't shoot a lot of threes at Texas. And we had him do that. And at times we were criticized, like, why are they playing this guy at guard? Why are they putting him in pick and rolls? You know, why are they letting him dribble the ball up the court? Because he could.
Staying with coaches, Brendan Haywood won a title with the Mavs in 2011. And when he joined LeBron and the Cavs under David Blatt, it was obvious when a head coaching change was needed.
We could see late in ball games, if he had to draw up plays, we could see he was super nervous. His hands would be shaking. He'd have to give the clipboard to Larry Drew. Larry Drew would draw the plays up. And when you see that, you understand. Like, this dude ain't ready. He's not ready for this. He's not ready for this. And it's not his fault because he thought he was taking on a rebuilding project. And then next thing you know, LeBron James calls up David Blatt and says, I'm coming. And now instead of taking on a rebuilding project with Kyrie and Deion Waiters at the forefront of it and Tristan Thompson, you have LeBron James and Kevin Love there. And now you're competing for a title. I think just Coach Blatt got hit with too much too soon. But it was easy to tell right away that Coach Blatt was probably in over his head.
Just like a head coach can lose a team, a woman can tear one apart as well. Butch Beard was an assistant with the Mavericks in the mid-90s as Grammy Award-winning R&B singer Toni Braxton came in between stars Jason Kidd and Jimmy Jackson.
I mean, it ended up being Jason and Jimmy, all right? Jason, Toni. Toni's not caring about either one of them. And then the team was taking sides. So I'll never forget, we had a damn team meeting. And I said, guys, it's a woman that's breaking us apart. And if the woman is that good, please, I want to see what her mother looks like. Because I want to date her mother. Come on.
Entertainment and the NBA will always be intertwined. The first to do that on the media side was the New York Post's Peter Vesey, who was also the sideline reporter for the national broadcasts on NBC. We asked Peter about his post-game interview with Karl Malone after the Jazz lost in the finals to the Bulls in 1997. The YouTube clip is titled, Peter Vesey Tries to Get Punched.
Karl was always a great interview. He would never not answer a question. You know, we really didn't get along. I disliked him on many levels. Respected him on many other levels as a player, but you know, he was a dirty player. And the first time that they showed it to me, I didn't even remember it. Okay. So I did this interview. I had no agenda. I was just going to ask him some tough questions, and I didn't care how tough because I really didn't like him. So, but I knew he was going to answer them. I didn't feel unsafe, and I didn't feel like I was doing something wrong. And it never dawned on me that came off the way it did. You know, my son would say to me, he said, wow, like, what were you thinking? So that was just doing my job. But I had no mindset going in other than I knew he was going to answer my question.
In 1997, former head coach Hubie Brown was broadcasting for TNT, but 5 years later was hired by Jerry West mid-season to coach the Memphis Grizzlies. Point guard Earl Watson was in his second year with the team and was thoroughly confused when it all went down.
Jerry West introduced Hubie. I'm 22 years old. We're in Memphis, losing franchise. First time in my life I ever been a part of anything that was losing. So it's all new to me. Just everything was like new to me. It almost made me sick. He introduces Hubie Brown, and I'm thinking, I got to call Bob because we just hired the TNT guy. This is crazy. I didn't know his full resume, right? So the first thing he says to us, he takes the podium and he says, first, I would like to say, you all are fucking losers. None of you are winners. If you was a winner, the other guy wouldn't be packing his stuff with his family. See, you got on fire. You're fucking losers. I'm going to teach you how to be a winner.
The Bob that Earl referred to was Bob Myers, his agent at the time and now the president of the Golden State Warriors. Stories like these are a taste of what Rejecting the Screen sounds like every week, so we hope you'll join us by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, follow on Spotify, or download and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for listening today. You can follow Rejecting the Screen on Spotify or subscribe on Apple Podcasts. We will be back next week with an interview with the one and only Jason Richardson, who will sit down with me and talk all about the We Believe Warriors team and some other things from his Warriors career. But that's it for us today. Thank you for listening, and please stay safe.